Welcome to Divorce Talk, a podcast for people who are contemplating divorce, going through one, or would like to know everything about the divorce process. Each episode, you'll hear from Chicago divorce lawyers from Bierman LLP, one of the largest divorce and family law firms in the state of Illinois, speak on all things divorce, from child custody, divorce litigation, mediation, the collaborative process, and everything in between. Now, here are your hosts, the Bierman Divorce Lawyers.
I'm Sandra Napoli Diarco. This podcast is for anyone who is considering a divorce, going through a divorce, or would like to educate themselves on divorce. Each episode features top divorce lawyers from Bierman LLP and will cover topics related to all aspects of divorce from lawyers who have seen and experienced almost everything. On this episode, we are talking about prenuptial agreements with Bierman divorce and family law attorneys Tom Field and Katie Michelson, who both have a wealth of experience working on all types of divorce matters. Today, you'll get to know Tom and Katie. Before we get started into the subject matter, Tom, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I've been practicing law since about 2001. I am a product of the local area, having grown up in Highland Park, and stayed local for college down in Champaign, as well as grad school back up here in Chicago. Makes me a little bit different in our area of law is not only do I have the law degree, but MBA in finance as well. I live in the city, despite having grown up on the North Shore, and have a wife and two boys that I'm raising in the city. I'm the head of our matrimonial practice here at Bierman, and I think that pretty much covers it.
Okay, thank you. Katie?
Well, I'm a family law attorney here. I've only done family law at Bierman, so I've been here since I was licensed in 2005, and I started out as a law clerk at Bierman, and now I'm a partner. I went to the University of Michigan and graduated in 1995. So after being at school, I went and actually did public relations for about 7 years. So my background's a little bit different. Did a career switch right before I turned 30. So went to law school straight at Chicago Kent and did that for 3 years and then graduated in 2005. And I've been here now for 14 years. And I also grew up on the North Shore, city over from Tom in Glencoe. But I do live in the city now. So I live in Roscoe Village, and I'm married with also two kids, also raising my kids in the city, and I'm happy to be here.
Great. All right. So this is always a sensitive topic, but as I've heard from both of you before, it doesn't have to be a sensitive topic. So Tom, let's just start this off and talk about what is a prenuptial agreement?
Sure. So a prenuptial agreement is a contract, you know, the beginning and the end of the day. What its goals are different for every client that comes to us. There is no form that we use that works for everybody. There's two pieces or parts to a prenuptial agreement as far as the directions they go. The one that most people are familiar with, which is the helping to plan for upon a divorce. The other part of it is helping to plan for on death, if the parties are still married. So beyond that, which is sort of the general goals of a prenuptial agreement, you get into the minutiae. Does somebody want to address how the property division is going to be at the end of a marriage? Do they want to qualify how income is going to be treated during the course of the marriage? Do they want to protect assets that they acquired or have rights to that existed prior to the marriage, or that they may acquire rights to after the date of the marriage? Is there a family business, etc.? So people come to us with a variety of different reasons why they may want a prenuptial agreement, but at the end of the day, it is a tool to plan. Some people consider it an estate planning tool. I always tell my clients, they come to see me, this is how you enhance an estate plan. This is like an estate plan on steroids. A prenuptial agreement can do a lot of things that an estate plan can't do in the state of Illinois, whereby you can alter how the law impacts a case beyond what it would otherwise provide for.
Okay. So, Katie, in your opinion and what you've seen over all these years, you know, who really needs a prenuptial agreement? Is it the person just walking off the street, someone who owns a business? How would I know going into a marriage whether or not I should consider having my fiance sign a prenuptial agreement?
Well, I think there's a lot of misconceptions that prenuptial agreements are only for the wealthy. I think prenuptial agreements can suit all types of clients depending upon what their needs are. As people get married later on in life, they've established themselves in careers. So people who get married later on in life and have assets to protect, have a career that they've built, have income to protect, might want to consider entering into a prenuptial agreement because it preserves that wealth that they've taken so much time to build. So that's one person that might come to me for a prenuptial agreement. It might be another person who has a significant amount of family wealth. So ultimately, as Tom has stated, what you're doing is you're protecting assets and income, but it's also at time protecting family assets and income. So if a family member has assets that ultimately an individual who might want to enter into prenup would ultimately receive via an inheritance or might be receiving during the marriage, it's a great way to protect that and to not even accidentally commingle those types of assets with what could be considered marital income or assets. So really, it runs the gamut. Again, it's not just for the millionaires. And I think that's a big misconception that people have. I think, as Tom said, every case is unique. There's no similar situation for any of our clients that come in the door. So those who want prenuptial agreements usually have a variety for wanting them. And we encourage them, especially knowing that people have their money and their assets that they want to protect.
So Katie mentioned commingling. I'd like for us to define what commingling is. And what does that mean for me?
Yeah, so commingling, from our perspective, from the legal perspective, is when you've got essentially two different pots, right? You've got the marital pot and the non-marital pot. Now, you have to start out, once there's a marriage, the presumption becomes, based on the law in Illinois, any income that is received after the date of the marriage is presumed to be marital. Any property that is acquired after the date of the marriage is presumed to be marital. Now, there are certain exceptions that are built into the law for what non-marital property is. But when we craft prenuptial agreements for our clients, we want to take the question out and not have to worry about proving that we fit into one of the specific exceptions that's set forth in the law. So in doing so, we take into consideration not only the assets that existed prior to the date of the marriage, not only the income streams that existed prior to the date of the marriage, but how do we address the what ifs going forward? So, for example, somebody owns a piece of property prior to the marriage that has a mortgage on it. They get married. They pay that mortgage, or they continue to pay that mortgage after the marriage. Well, what money are they using to pay the mortgage? If they're using the joint checking account or even the income that they're earning from their employment, you've got the marriage and the marital estate contributing to somebody's non-marital estate. So one party is benefiting. Even if they're all living in the same house and the other spouse is benefiting from living there, you've still got one spouse that's benefiting by getting enhancement because the principal value of that house is going up as the mortgage payments go down. So the prenuptial agreements in a circumstance like that would say, well, the marital estate is not entitled to a reimbursement. That's one scenario, even though it has enhanced the value of the non-marital estate. It would also likely say that the marital estate is not only not entitled to a reimbursement, but it's not entitled to any property value, any rights or interests in that property would not inure to the benefit of the marital estate. So that's really an example, and it's just a one, but of where commingling could be an issue. Another simple one is where a party comes to the marriage with assets or is the beneficiary of a trust or inherits or is gifted money during the marriage, any of those scenarios. and that income flows to them from those assets. Well, how does that income get treated then? So the question is, well, twofold. One, is the marital estate paying taxes on that income, that somebody's non-marital stream of income? The marital estate then would be hurting, and the spouse that has that non-marital stream is again benefiting. You've also got the circumstance where that non-marital stream comes in and somebody potentially gets told later on in a divorce scenario that that non-marital stream of income is available for purposes of calculating a support obligation in the future. So I guess I'm getting away a little bit from the commingling issue that you asked about, but we in a prenuptial agreement can exclude non-marital income, or passive income as we call it, from being considered by the courts when otherwise it would be presumptively considered as income to that party.
So what is really the difference between an estate plan and a prenuptial agreement, right? Because they're both planning for the future. If I have an estate plan, can I forego the prenuptial agreement or vice versa?
Again, I think what Tom has stated before, it's an enhancement. So it's a way to make sure that your estate plan is actually carried out. So a prenuptial agreement will address issues not only as it relates to divorce, but also to death provisions. Estate planning is, and it's a common misnomer that estate planning only deals with death. Estate planning is planning your estate. So how are you going to invest your assets? How are you going to deal with income that you're receiving during the marriage? But an estate plan does certain things that's different from a prenup, and a prenup does certain things that an estate plan cannot. So a prenup,
that's the key.
Yeah. And so a prenuptial agreement, as we like to say, has more teeth than an estate plan. So when we enter into a prenuptial agreement, and I think it was alluded to before, we're altering the laws in the event of a divorce and altering the laws in the event of death. Should you choose to have a prenuptial agreement be enforced by Illinois law, and most of our clients do, given that they're in Illinois, and a question that I'm assuming later will be, does Illinois have to be the state, which it does not. It's a choice of law provision, as in any contract. The majority of our clients, though, do use Illinois law.
So can you just step back for one second? So are you saying if someone moves to another state, but they had their original prenuptial agreement drafted in Illinois, Illinois law will prevail?
The prenuptial agreement should specifically have a provision that states what law will prevail in the event of it needing to be enforced. So any prenuptial agreement should state which law would apply. So given the fact that our society is so mobile, it's not realistic to think that people enter into a prenuptial agreement and will remain in that state. The good news is that your prenuptial agreement, though, will have that provision. And so you'll have some be able to expect where the law is, which law is going to rule in the event the prenup needs to be enforced or ultimately invalidated. So
another reason why that's hugely important is that if there isn't a choice of law provision in the agreement, then one party, one spouse to the marriage, could go form selecting. And what that means is they could leave the state of Illinois and go seek out to domicile themselves in another state where they think the laws may be more favorable to them upon a divorce. And so this takes that away from them. It takes the ability for somebody to go form shopping away and says, you can live wherever you want to live. And as Katie said, we're a more mobile society than we used to be. So people do move. And it's impossible to anticipate, you know, 10, 20, 30 years down the road where you're going to be residing necessarily if you have a prenuptial agreement. So this takes all of that guesswork out and says, we're applying Illinois law, whether we live in Alaska, Florida, New York, doesn't matter.
And dovetailing off of that and going back to your original question about what a prenuptial agreement can do. So to build on what Tom is stating about having that predictability of knowing what state you'd be in, a prenup gives you predictability about what's going to happen in the event of a divorce. Now, when we have handling divorces for our clients, our Illinois Marriage and Dissolution of Marriage Act sets forth the parameters in which we will get a divorce granted in the state of Illinois. And there are issues that need to be decided. One is property settlement, which includes property allocation, classification, and so forth. Another is maintenance, spousal support. So a prenuptial agreement, and which is not what an estate plan can do, a prenuptial agreement can address specifically classification and allocation of assets. So as was alluded to earlier, assets acquired during the marriage, income earned during the marriage, are presumed to be marital. Our Illinois Marriage and Dissolution of Marriage Act creates a burden on the person showing that something should be considered non-marital. So when you have a prenuptial agreement, which is not what an estate plan does, it defines that. And it basically states, I'm going to take the guesswork out of determining what is a marital versus a non-marital asset. Also, you have issues with regards to spousal support. So maintenance, formerly known as alimony. A prenuptial agreement can address whether there's a waiver, whether there's a buyout, whether it's reserved. In Illinois, maintenance is not an automatic. It still needs to be deemed as whether it's appropriate in every case. So there still is that two-step analysis, whether it's appropriate, and if it is appropriate, how much. But again, that guesswork is taken out of it by a prenuptial agreement. An estate plan doesn't address that. It doesn't address any of issues as it relates to spousal support. Now, what a prenuptial agreement cannot do is it cannot address anything child-related. So if you get divorced in Illinois, you still could have some issues that need to be decided by a court if you don't agree with it. And that would be anything related to children, child support, child-related expenses, decision-making, visitation, and the like.
One thing that made me think of is, because a prenuptial agreement has so many potential benefits when it can predetermine outcomes as to so many different aspects of a dissolution of marriage, the thing that people take for granted, I think, most, and I've heard this so many times from potential clients and past clients, is, you know, when they say, how much is this going to cost me? And, you know, we give them a ballpark idea of it, which is never a significant amount of money.
So give us an idea. What does a prenup cost?
So I would tell you that a prenuptial agreement probably costs somewhere between $3,000 and $10,000 on average. It always depends, and I tell this to clients, whether it's a divorce or a prenup, on how the spouse or soon-to-be spouse on the other side behaves and who their lawyer is, because those are two variables that we can never control. But that amount of money, in the cases that we're accustomed to dealing with, is a really paltry sum when you contemplate how much a divorce could potentially cost and how much is spent arguing in attorney's fees over issues like the characterization of assets as marital versus non-marital, valuing assets, whether there's been commingling or not, what income is available for purposes of support. Any one of those issues could cost tens of thousands of dollars or more to hash out or argue over. So I would actually argue that a prenuptial agreement is a really valuable document, contract, that a party can get and possess for not a lot of money, that gives you so much peace of mind if done right, that it's absolutely a worthwhile endeavor.
Are prenups 100% enforceable?
So the Uniform Premarital Agreement Act, which has been adopted by most of the states, is what we're looking at. Generally, as a contract, a prenuptial agreement can only be invalidated by determining whether there's been fraud, coercion, duress. And so you can invalidate a contract by that, a written contract. But we have an extra set of security through the Uniform Premarital Agreement Act, which Illinois has adopted, and many states, most states, I would say, has adopted the Uniform Premarital Agreement Act. So in terms of invalidating a prenuptial agreement, it's hard. You have to demonstrate certain things. You have to demonstrate that, as I mentioned, you entered into that agreement under duress, coercion. You entered into it potentially on the eve of your marriage and you didn't have time to review. You didn't have an attorney to assist you in the review. These are all things that we suggest to our clients are ways to think about. So you're not entering into a prenuptial agreement the night that you get married. You're handed a prenuptial agreement and told to sign it. That you make sure you have independent counsel hired by your own accord That's another issue, making sure that it's somebody that you've individually sought out and there's not an influence by the other side. So, you know, there are factors that a court will look at, but it's not easy to invalidate a prenuptial agreement, simply also with the adoption of the statutory language that requires you to prove many things. There is one portion of the Uniform Premarital Agreement Act that will consider, even if a prenuptial agreement is valid, that the maintenance, spousal support provisions are not. And that section specifically says, if you can demonstrate that there was something not contemplated at the time you entered into the premarital agreement, which would make, say, a waiver of maintenance unfair, and it wouldn't be in the best interest of the person that could be receiving maintenance, that could be a basis not to invalidate the prenuptial agreement, but to at least award spousal support to a spouse who's seeking that spousal support. But again, contracts are very difficult to invalidate. It's an expensive proposition as well.
That issue, by the way, has to really be an unforeseeable event. So if somebody comes to the marriage and has no income and no assets and freely and voluntarily, not under duress, enters into the agreement, waiving their right to seek maintenance in the future, well, it's foreseeable at that time that they didn't have any income, they didn't have any assets, that they wouldn't be able to support themselves. So if you knowingly enter into an agreement, knowing that you probably couldn't support yourself, that's not going to be an unforeseeable circumstance. Now, if you've got a little bit of income or a little bit of assets, and you know, some point during the marriage, there's a catastrophic accident and somebody is wheelchair bound or loses some form of mental capacity. Okay, now you've got an unforeseeable event that's occurred that's created a scenario where the person may need support as our statute requires. So I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a way to, you know, invalidate that portion, but it is rare. And it's hard.
And I think, you know, one of the things...
But you have done that. The firm and the attorneys
we have
fought prenups.
We have,
but it's hard. And I always tell my clients, I never try to set the expectation that there's a definite win ever. You know, there's a lot of factors that a court considers whenever it hears arguments about whether something, a contract shouldn't be held valid. To touch on something that Tom said, there's a difference between what's fair and what's unforeseeable. So if I think it's not fair that my spouse has been earning a living and I've been a stay-at-home parent, and I think I should be entitled to maintenance, that's not an unforeseeable event. So we deal with questions of fairness all the time. And unfortunately, what is considered fair is very different in everyone's eyes. But bringing it back to a prenuptial agreement, the concept of fairness goes away a bit. And there's, again, more of an idea of I have some predictability and I don't have to have someone else telling me what's fair. Because what might be fair in my mind is going to be very different in what's fair in the eyes of a judge or the other side. And then one of the other comments that Tom had made in terms of cost, another thing that we can't predict is what the judge is going to do. And that also creates cost. So in addition to, I think, what Tom has said about a lot of it depends upon the other side and the attorney that they hire, and you can eliminate that uncertainty, you also can eliminate court. And you can eliminate the uncertainty of litigation, provided nobody's arguing the prenuptial agreement is not valid. But again, that puts a little bit more certainty into the eyes of our client.
Do both parties need to hire a lawyer? If I'm presented with a prenup, do I also need to hire a lawyer? Or can that same lawyer represent both parties?
Is it an absolute requirement? No. Do I require it of my clients? 100%. I will not allow somebody to enter into a prenuptial agreement unless I know both people are represented. It's just good practice. It's conservative lawyering. You always want to make sure that the party on the other side of the case has had an opportunity to consult a lawyer, has had the opportunity for a lawyer to review the document with them, has had an opportunity to potentially ask for modifications, that's not on the eve of the wedding. And to me, that's really beyond best practices. I think it's the only way to do it. Some clients will say, well, can I pay for the other party's fees because they can't afford it, or I'm the one that wants it and I think that's fair. That's not a problem. And in fact, I oftentimes will give clients a list of several other lawyers at different firms who I think would be glad to do the work and not so aggressive that they're going to try to blow up any basic agreements, but that's okay too.
So if I've signed a prenup and a month down the road, or maybe even a year down the road, I change my mind, or I would like something changed in the prenup, is that possible to change it once it has been drafted?
Sure.
And we've been married.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the prenuptial agreement should have a provision in there that reflects how modifications can be made. So modifications should be in writing. They should be witnessed in a similar way that a prenuptial agreement is signed originally. There should be witnesses there. You should make sure that everyone understands the terms of the modification, and it should be appended to the prenuptial agreement, which sounds like an obvious thing, but you certainly don't want to have an amendment that all of a sudden is not in existence and nobody has a copy of it. So yes, amendments can happen, but I caution against oral amendments, and everything should be in writing. So, you know, prenuptial agreements will continue to exist as long as you both acknowledge that it exists, even if it's later tossed in a top drawer and nobody pays attention to it during the course of the marriage. It's a contract that prevails. So I just suggest to my clients, they always keep a copy in multiple places. They have their eye on it, making sure it's all amendments are attached to it, signed by both parties, read by both parties. Again, it's never a bad decision to have an attorney review an amendment with you to make sure that you're not altering rights that might be contrary to other terms in the prenuptial agreement. What you'll find is oftentimes people will amend prenuptial agreements but won't pay attention to the other terms in it. And so the amendments can run contrary to other terms in the prenuptial agreement. Now, one of the bases that could be for invalidating a prenuptial agreement is it doesn't really make sense. I mean, if you ultimately, if it's not even you can't perform on the contract, you know, it would be very difficult to have it enforceable. At least you would need some kind of instruction by the court and how you're supposed to have it enforced. So again, best practices, have an attorney review it with you. I think of prenuptial agreements and amendments almost like marital settlement agreements. You're pre-writing your marital settlement agreement. You wouldn't enter into a marital settlement agreement without understanding all the terms. The marital settlement agreement, which is the financial agreement, the terms that are ultimately merged into the order that dissolves your marriage. You wouldn't, in a slapshot way, enter into a marital settlement agreement without disclosure of information, review of terms. You don't do that quickly. You shouldn't do that quickly, as we would counsel our clients to do. So I would treat it as if it's a financial, it's a pre-financial settlement, because you're not getting a divorce yet, but treat it that way, and I think you'd be in good shape.
Is there anything, whether I am a CEO of a company or just part-time worker, that I should bring to my attorney's attention regarding what should be in it? Or will the attorney recommend what should be in it based on who I am in my particular situation?
I think who you are and what your asset picture looks like, what your income stream looks like, what your expectations of the future look like, that's the information you bring to your lawyer for them to analyze for you. But really, it's not about whether you're a CEO or have a closely held business. It's really about what you're trying to accomplish based on what you have or your streams of income. Clearly, the needs of people vary dramatically, but I would argue the CEO of a company may be in a position where he wants to make sure, were he to get divorced, that any stock he has in the company is in his control or her control in order to prevent any negativity flowing to the business. By way of example, and I've written an article on this not that long ago, if it's a publicly traded company and it's a public divorce and a spouse is potentially going to get a significant amount of stock in the business because that's a lot of the party's assets, that could be concerning if you're a shareholder. is the spouse all of a sudden going to come in and have a seat on the board and be able to direct or interfere with major business decisions? Mm-hmm. Is there going to be a huge tranche of stock that's all of a sudden going to get sold and flood the market with that stock such that it devalues the stock in the short term? Those are concerns. And a lot of times, whether we have clients that are closely held business owners or in partnerships, they will have, and sometimes will prepare or advise them to prepare with their corporate lawyers, spousal waivers, such that the spouses waive their right to physically possess the stock in the event of a divorce, which doesn't waive their right to an interest in that as a marital asset, but it just says they can't hold it. They can't ever vote the stock. And that's a way to protect businesses. So, you know, you sort of ask the differences between people coming to the marriage. There are different reasons why people want this, clearly, but treatment is all a function of what you're trying to accomplish.
Makes sense. So, Katie, whoever you speak to, or whoever I speak to regarding, you know, prenups, it's kind of, again, we started saying it's a sensitive topic. Some may think you're entering into a marriage already on the wrong foot. What's your recommendation as to how to ask your fiance or present them with a prenuptial agreement?
I think it's very fact specific, just like everything that we've said here. I tell my clients that marriage is not all about romance. It's also a business partnership because you're going to be sharing income and assets. You're going to be building an estate together. So as any owner of a business or owner of any assets, you need to kind of look at it as a business decision, a partnership. So in any kind of a partnership, you have to have an exit plan, which doesn't sound very romantic.
It doesn't.
In what we do, romance is not generally at the forefront of what we're doing. Our clients look at us not to be overly sensitive and romantic. We're looking and saying, okay, what is the law going to provide to you? How are you going to be protected under the law? So I will tell my clients, it's a tough conversation to have. I'm not immune from how tough it is. It's sensitive, but having a really open and honest conversation with your fiance before an attorney reaches out to that fiance, I think that's a really an important point. Having an open conversation and not getting the lawyers involved right away, I think builds trust. So I suggest to my clients that they approach their soon-to-be spouse with that information and suggest that. You know, there's other reasons why people want a prenuptial agreement. There's, you know, to protect family wealth, there's a lot of different reasons. So sometimes you can shoulder the burden on to other individuals who are insisting that the prenup happen. Again, from a business perspective, I've had clients where there's a wealthy family and they are requiring all of their children to have prenuptial agreements. That's a condition that their parents have decided is important to them in order to preserve the family wealth. One of my clients had to go through and do that, and she knows all of her siblings after her are going to have to get a prenuptial agreement. So it's already set the bar. So there's
more business for you.
More business for me. Repeating business. So again, it's, as I think we've said repeatedly, it's a very fact-specific reason for why a prenup needs to be had. But my ultimate recommendation is be honest. Try to do it among yourselves. We don't like to create strife. We don't want to create animosity off the bat. But understanding it's an uncomfortable conversation to have, but there are ways that you can do it without blowing up a marriage before a marriage even starts.
Have either of you ever had a situation where your client has presented a prenup and the marriage did not happen?
I've had two in 17 years. Okay. But I can tell you with the benefit of being a Monday morning quarterback sort of on both scenarios, it was a good thing that neither of them did go forward. They were doomed to fail. There is no question. First of all, one of them ended up in litigation afterwards because they bought a condominium together and one wouldn't move out. The other one wanted to sell it. It was a mess. So clearly they shouldn't have gotten together in the first place. They went a little too far, further than they should have. And the other one was an absolute mess. And again, heard later from the former client that, you know, she was actually grateful that it didn't happen. So
So one last question before we close. Katie, I know you're a mom of two. Would you require your children or highly recommend your children to get a prenup?
I would talk to my kids about what they're trying to accomplish. I really think it's important to figure out if it's important to them. The benefit my kids have is, and my kids are young, they're 6 and 9, so I don't have to worry about that for a while. But the benefit is that they have a mom who knows what happens in the event of a divorce. So I, as a mom, it's kind of difficult to convey as a business person the same thing to your kids. And as we all know, our kids don't listen to us. But I would have an honest conversation about it, much like I do with all of my clients. I would caution them of the results of not. I think it would be an individual decision, but I'm a mom and I probably would be saying, well, you know, you got to listen to me and I'm your mom, but I can't force my kids to do it. Knowing what I know and having done it for as long as I have, I've seen what happens when you don't have a prenuptial agreement, and it can really benefit people, again, to have that certainty. So I would try to impart that practicality on my kids to the extent that I can and to the extent that they would listen to their mother.
Any last words, Tom?
I would just say to tack on to that, you know, just because you have a prenuptial agreement doesn't mean you have to tackle every issue either. They're so customizable that, you know, sometimes clients want to only address property division upon divorce. Sometimes clients only want to address spousal support upon a divorce. So there's that middle ground where, like Katie was saying, you know, have the conversation with your kids. Yeah, I would probably encourage them, if they were comfortable with it, to take at least some issues off the table to simplify. And you know, a prenuptial agreement is no different than going out and buying an insurance policy. You hope you never need it. There's an attendant cost to it, but the reality is if you ever do need it, just like in a life insurance policy, the return is going to be exponentially greater than the cost.
Well, thank you so much. We are out of time. Thank you for listening. Please visit BiermanLaw.com for more information regarding this podcast. Please also subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for new episodes that will be released every other week on topics related to divorce. And you haven't seen the last of Katie or Tom because they will be back, speaking about different topics. And if you like what you hear and think a friend can benefit from the information, please do share it. You are also welcome to reach out directly to Katie or Tom or any attorney featured on our podcasts or schedule a consultation with them as well. Until next time, I'm Sandra Napoli-Diarco from Bierman LLP.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Divorce Talk. Visit our website at www.biermanlaw.com, where you can subscribe to the show so you'll never have to miss a single one. Please also follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn and subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating. Be sure to tune in next time for another enlightening episode.